Can big social media companies police themselves when it comes to combating propaganda? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The head of a trade association that represents tech companies like Google, Facebook, Twitter is testifying before Congress today. This comes as Congress investigates whether Russian agents used ads on U.S. social media platforms to mess with the 2016 presidential election. Lawmakers are also considering a bill to make bigger internet platforms disclose more about political ads. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra joins us. I see that Randall Rothenberg, the head of this group, the Interactive Advertising Bureau, has released his prepared testimony. What's it say?
Well, first off, he points out that right now there are federal rules that require political ads on media platforms, including digital ones, to post certain disclaimers. But the requirements for ads that run on traditional media, like TV, are stricter than the ones on websites like Facebook. And Rothenberg says the group supports updating those rules so they're clear. But he says that wouldn't necessarily fix the problem. The rules only apply if an ad advocates for or against a political candidate. Some of the Russian-affiliated ads that we're talking about don't. They're focused on politically divisive issues like immigration and guns. And Rothenberg argues that requiring tech companies to disclose data on who's buying ads related to some broad political issue could violate the First Amendment.
So is he proposing anything?
Well, he says these digital media companies like Google and Facebook should be allowed to police themselves. He doesn't give concrete examples on how they might do that. But Facebook announced this month that it's hiring more than 1,000 people to review its ads and that it's building tools to make advertising more transparent. So, for instance, you'll be able to see what other ads a particular page that's targeting you is running. We'll hear more about this next week when lawyers for some of the big tech companies testify in front of Congress.
All right, Mariel Segarra, thank you. More than 20% of Fortune 500 CEOs in one recent year were immigrants who start businesses at a higher rate than the general population. Now, that said, many children of new immigrants, especially immigrants of color, face persistent challenges: education, economic success. There's a new study today about these challenges from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Marketplace's Ryan Kailoth has more.
Roughly one in four children in an immigrant family lives below the federal poverty line. Laura Speer of the Casey Foundation says all kinds of factors contribute to that. Immigrant parents working for lower wages, language barriers in schools.
The child is less likely to have a parent who has at least a high school diploma than the average child in a U.S.-born family.
And they face barriers into young adulthood that other groups don't even really consider. For example,
I just received an email of a University of Maryland student.
Maritza Solano is director of education at CASA, an advocacy group for Latino immigrants. The young woman who emailed her is a first-generation Latina college student. She's an American citizen and should qualify for extensive student loans. But because her parents are undocumented,
her parents can't prove that they have income,
which means the young woman can't prove she qualifies and may have to leave school. The Casey Foundation report recommends several targeted strategies to address problems like this and other barriers that immigrant families face. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailoth for Marketplace.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation is one of Marketplace's funders. Starting in January, people 21 and older will be able to buy marijuana in California for recreational use. That's already the case in about seven other states. And while buyers will be able to choose from a cornucopia of cannabis products, law enforcement still will not have a fast, reliable test for who is and who is not stoned behind the wheel. Standard breathalyzers cannot do marijuana, and blood and urine tests have trouble telling whether someone did marijuana 5 minutes ago or last week. Lauren Silverman reports.
In states where marijuana is legal, police officers, employers, they all have a serious dilemma.
The problem is really figuring out who's actually stoned, shouldn't be behind the wheel, or in the cockpit in an airplane, or in an operating room in a hospital, versus who just has THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, floating around their system.
This guy, Mike Lynn, knows the problem. He's an emergency medicine physician in Oakland, California, and a reserve deputy sheriff. He's also selling a solution.
What I'm holding is the Hound marijuana breathalyzer. And it basically
the Hound device is a small breathalyzer that has a tube sticking out of it. You blow through it a few times. And Lynn says, in minutes, it's able to analyze and detect the amount of THC in someone's breath. Research shows that level rises right after smoking, and those first few hours are when someone is most likely to be impaired, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. That's why a marijuana breathalyzer would be a big improvement from blood and urine tests, which aren't sensitive enough to determine whether someone smoked marijuana right before driving or days ago at a party.
There are several of them trying to come out with the devices.
Sergeant Mark Vincent is a drug recognition expert in Texas. He says if a breathalyzer passes clinical trials, police officers across the country would be interested. The problem with all the THC tests in development, Vincent says, is they measure an amount, not a behavior.
I need to be able to show, prove that there's impairment, that they can't safely operate a vehicle, and that's what we're trying to do.
Some states where it's legal to smoke pot for medicinal or recreational purposes, like Colorado and Montana, have selected a limit for THC in blood. But scientists still disagree on what amount indicates someone is too high to drive. Companies trying to sell marijuana breathalyzers might have to wait for a standard measuring system if they hope to sell out of their measuring sticks. In Oakland, California, I'm Lauren Silverman for Marketplace.
Lauren's normally at KERA, and faculty at the University of Wisconsin are expected to vote in the coming weeks to maybe stop new admissions to the university's full-time MBA program for a year. If approved, there would be no full-time class of 2020. Business schools are up against a strong economy where potential students have jobs and they don't want to leave and are more into part-time MBA programs. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.